Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 16th, 2001. In the fireside room this morning is Ingrid Christensen. Today's session number is CHI 2001-1, and it's titled Love and Hate, the Manual. Let's listen in.
We're going to begin now. I would like to introduce myself. I'm Ingrid Christensen, and this is the story writing workshop, and today the subject is up to you, but the subject that I'm going to spend a little time framing up is the question of love and hate in our lives. And so I'd like to begin with a moment of prayer. Gracious God, we ask your presence among us as we have the privilege of some time this morning to sort and sift and weave and think about the stories of our lives. We're grateful for the gift of creativity, and we're grateful for our lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
This is an opportunity for you to do some writing, but first I get to talk, so I'll start. I would actually like to start with all of you saying just your first name and the name of someone in your life whose spirit you would like to invoke, that you'd like to have with you today. It may not be a person that you'll end up writing about today, but it might be someone who you know loves you unconditionally or did when that person was alive. It might be someone who you admire or think about, just someone whose spirit you would like to have sitting next to you. So just share with us your first name and the name of the other person, just to call their names into the room.
I'm Sally, and a person is Grandma Alma.
Thank you.
Gloria. Margaret.
Thank you.
I'm Janet, and I'd like to call my father Paul.
Thank you.
I'm Kristen, and I'd like to call my friend Lauren.
And Greta.
If you want to call it later, you certainly may.
John Myrtle.
I'm Kathy.
Beverly and my sister-in-law, Luetta. Mm-hmm.
Karen and Susan.
Janet, Christopher.
Luann and Charles.
Terry and Miss Tina.
Yvonne and my mother, Lana.
Mm-hmm.
Joanne and Hollis.
Carol and my mother, Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Vance and Lawrence.
Geneva and Kate. Joyce and Ernest.
Joyce and Simon.
Chris, Richard. Mm-hmm.
Dorothy and my mom, Peter.
Marcella, my mother, Margaret.
Katrina, my mother, Cleora.
Lynn, Charles.
Thank you. Did you want to add a name to the room, into the mix? Okay. Thanks a lot. I will name my mother, Eleanor.
I'm looking for a pencil here.
I have a few extra pens, and I have some paper.
I did find one. I'll put it back.
Good. Why I call this Love, Hate, the Manual is that I think we all have all the answers. We know everything. We know these stories. A friend of mine who's a sociologist says her husband, who's an historian, says sociology is just doing gossip. And, you know, it was a way of putting down women. They were soon divorced after he said that. But I think that we have a lot of wisdom in this room and a lot of stories to tell. And so we're writing a manual today on these subjects of love and hate. And I think we will learn a lot from one another in the process. What are stories for? Stories are parables. Stories teach. Stories impose order on our experience. They're morality tales. They're fables. Bible stories. Jesus taught in stories all the time. So we know the power of story to teach. what's really important, I think, is the power of our story, for us to be able to tell our own story, each of us to be able to say, to impose some meaning and order on the story of our lives. And what I have learned through the years, and this is a very serious warning that I would give you, is don't tell your story to someone who doesn't love you, especially when you're first telling your story. It's one of the reasons I wanted to invoke those names, because if you're telling anything or doing anything around people who adore you and think you're smart and capable and competent, it turns out you're smart and capable and competent. But if you're telling a story about your life to someone who thinks poorly of you or looks down on you, your story kind of turns to dross. It's like when I'm driving and the person next to me thinks I'm terrific. I'm a good driver. But if the person next to me is someone who makes me nervous and I don't think I'm good enough for them, and so I start to go through red lights and I drive a stick and I kill the car, you know, and it's... There's a study that was done on that where three teachers were given three matched sets of children in second grade or something, and one teacher was told, you've got the dummies. And another teacher was told, they're all the same. And the third teacher was told, you've got the smart kids. But don't tell anyone. And by about a third of the way into the fall, the kids were testing dramatically differently depending on what their teacher had been whispered to. Their competence fell. And that's the way it is with our stories of our lives. We need to tell these stories, especially when we're first telling our stories, we need to tell them in the ear of someone who loves us, because it helps us. It's like when I come home at the end of a hard day at work and I tell my husband, who adores me, the story of my day. Even if I had to fire someone, even if I had to fire someone that we love, he assumes I was a good person doing that. He assumes I did it for good reason. He doesn't say, you know, he listens with a sympathetic ear. So that's who you should be telling your story to in your mind, because it makes it a different story. And it makes it a story that's more true and a story that you can live with. So stories are pretty powerful. They do provide proof for things. They provide the explanation or the proof in our lives for lots of things that we've done. You know, if you tell the story of the birth of your firstborn, if you tell the story of the death of a beloved family member, if you tell the story of your divorce, if you tell the story of if you're losing your job, remember the pastor last night telling us when he called home and had lost his job and called home and he'd been kicked out of school. His posture didn't sink. His family loved him, and they made it all right. They were sympathetic. So that's what I really hope for today. Because I want to spend a lot of time writing, I'm going to go sort of quickly through some things now. I don't want you to write a story today that you are worried about the facts of. You can create a story. You don't have to tell the truth in some factual sense. You can distort or, you know, through the details we choose, the truth will change anyhow. So don't worry about fact. That's not the issue. Don't worry about telling the whole story of your life or of a period of your life or of an event. I'm going to give you some structure to hang a story onto. And the themes of your life will emerge through the structure. The structure will do the trick. So you could be talking about clothing. You could be talking about some room, the room you had in your house. You could be talking about all those things. And the structure, the point you wanted to make, would emerge through that narrow little topic. So I'll get back to that. I want to read you a couple of things to show you how that works and how important that is. The first line of Doris Lessing's story, a short story called To Room 19, reads as follows. This is a story, I suppose, about a failure in intelligence. The Rawlings marriage was grounded in intelligence. You know so much from that line. Already you know that the marriage failed, or at least that the ground of being of the marriage failed, the failure of intelligence, and that the marriage was grounded in intelligence tells you a lot about the two people, and you know, so what we're going to hear in here is not all the slights and bad things they did to one another if we were to read this story, but we would hear the story of the failure of intelligence. Another opening line is in Grace Paley's story called An Interest in Life. Yes, I love this beginning. Great first line for a story. My husband gave me a broom one Christmas. This wasn't right. No one can tell me it was meant kindly. You know a lot about that marriage already. My husband gave me a broom one Christmas. This wasn't right. So that opening line tells you a lot about that marriage. And, you know, it tells you a lot, and it saves words. She doesn't have to tell us a lot else, because we know that. So there's another one I want to read you in here. That is, this one is by Jennifer Ast, and it's called... This title of this story is called Regina, Saskatchewan. And it starts out in a word that you wouldn't think is very promising for the beginning line, but beginning lines can be anything. It starts out with the word it, which is referring to the title, Regina, Saskatchewan. It was a place of childhood memories, of warmth and love, and cherry blossoms in the summertime. You know right away, this is not ominous. You know that this setting that we're getting is a warm, that's got cherry blossoms, warmth and love, childhood memories. The next line is, it was a place of two grandmothers, separate but together. It was a place of swimming pools and picnic lunches, of suntan lotion and lemonade. So it goes on. Already we know a lot about both the writer and the place of Regina. We'll find out what happens there in this setting, and we'll find out why there's a story there. But it starts out just naming a place and talking about the place. So, I'm going to give you four possible topics to write on. Then I'm going to ask you to write for 12 minutes or so. And then, without stopping, keep your pen on the paper. She's giggling over here already. You can write a lot in 12 minutes. And then I'm going to invite us to, those who would like to share what they've written. I'm going to go through these four different possible introductions or invitations onto the blank page. If you hear one that you like and you're ready to go with it, just go with it. Let me give you an example that I'm not going to use today, but which you can use, that lots of people have written to in the past. When I was growing up, all our Sundays were just alike. Now, what could you do with that? When I was growing up, you could say, all our Sundays were completely different. I lived in a chaotic household. I hated the chaos, you know. Or you could say, what was interesting about the one Sunday that was different? When I was growing up, all our Sundays were just alike. And therefore, the one exception to that rule was a fascinating story. Or you could say, when I was growing up, all our Sundays were just alike. We always started with blueberry pancakes. When I awoke in my bed, I smelled, you know, my mother cooking blueberry pancakes. Or you could say, when I was growing up, all our Sundays were just alike, and I hated every one of them. The Sunday might be the day that the father who was hungover had time to abuse his family. You know, so it would be an invitation. So in other words, the words that I give you as possible starting places are invitations onto the page, but they have to go into your brain and do something. If after the first invitation you're ready to write, just write and ignore the rest of us. If you hear all four and you want to hear the first one again, I'll read it again. So you're going to have plenty of opportunities to hear these invitations, and there are different kinds of invitations. And some of them are sort of framed up around love, and some are kind of framed up around hate. But you can go in any direction you like. I just think it's interesting and important for us to explore the things we love and explore the things we hate. So let me give you these four invitations onto the blank page. The first one is by one of my favorite authors, Barbara Kingsolver. And it's about love. The words that she ends with, that I sort of envisioned as an invitation into writing, are, "I am blessed with a husband who makes bread." But how she gets to the point of saying that is, it's a poem called Daily Bread. "The clink of tin cups in the kitchen rouses my ears. I close my book, hold my place with a fingertip, while I listen to the measuring cups, little quarrels of half against quarter, then the sifted hush of the flour. There will be kneading, there will be punching down, and rising again. The press of increase constrained by the small square box in the oven. The immutable passage of time. And finally, a home and a hunger filled with fragrant gold. I return to my reading, but first I thank the kitchen gods for what marriage is." That's another good line. "I thank the kitchen gods for what marriage is. Throughout this immutable passage, these square, impossible constraints, these petty clinkings of half against quarter, and oh, this kneading, oh, this falling and this rising, I am blessed with a husband who bakes bread." So that's a way. Would you say that she loves her husband?
Absolutely.
She loves that man. And she tells us she loves him by talking about the cups and the quarter cups and half cup measuring cups in the kitchen and the kneading and the rising of the bread and the smell of the bread filling the house. "I am blessed with a husband who bakes bread." So that is one possible place. Another possible place is Sharon Olds. This one is about hate. And you can tell how she gets to the hate in this one. It's called The Eye. "My bad grandfather wouldn't feed us. He turned the lights out when we tried to read. He sat alone in the invisible room in front of the hearth and drank. He died when I was 7, and Grandma had never once taken anyone's side against him, the firelight on his red, cold face reflecting extra on his glass eye. Today I thought about that glass eye and how at night in the big double bed he slept facing his wife and how the limp hole where his eye had been was open towards her on the pillow. And how I am 1/4 him, a brutal man with a hole for an eye, and 1/4 her, a woman who protected no one. I am their sex, too, their son, their bed, and under their bed, the trap door to the cellar with its barrel of fresh apples. And somewhere in me, too, is the path down to the creek, gleaming in the dark. A way out of there. Somewhere in me, too, is the path down to the creek, gleaming in the dark. A way out of there." So it's these details about the guy taking his eye out at night and sleeping on the pillow facing his wife with the hole, you know. And he would turn out the lights when the kids were trying to read. So the details, the life there is in the details. But the opening sentence is a good one, too. My bad grandfather wouldn't feed us. You know, how much more base can you get? The person who wasn't being fed was under 7, we know, because she was 7 when he died. So you could just start out with a sentence like that. You could just start out with a sentence naming the person and a detail of what that person did that made that person so hateful. And the way it ends is this hopeful line, somewhere in me too is the path down to the creek gleaming in the dark. It's interesting that the path down to the creek gleamed in the dark. She got out of there in the dark. A way out of there. You could use a way out of there as a first line. And say, a way out of there. A way out of there. It could become a chant. I finally found the way out of there. So that's a second possibility. A third possibility is by Laurie Misick. It's called Facts About My Grandmother. This is always a wonderful way to write about if you're stuck, especially. It's a wonderful, I've read more wonderful pieces to this prompt. Facts About My Great-Grandmother. Her name was Daisy May. She was born in 1894 in California or Missouri, depending on who you talk to. She had 15 children, lost 4 before they walked. She said Worsh instead of Wash. Once stood 5'6", but when I knew her, she had shrunk. Her long piano-playing fingers thinner, gnarled around a varnished cane, like confused roots of an old tree. Her last name was Barnes, changed from Barnes before she took her husband's name, Childers. The third generation down says her dad was Spanish, the fourth say Mexican, and some of the fifth whisper Indian at family reunions. She married and moved north to the flat north of the plains, the flat plate of the plains, Nebraska or South Dakota, depending on who you talk to. And the line in there, depending on who you talk to, reoccurs through the whole thing, telling us that the story of this family is not documented, but there's a lot of love in it, I think. The frame of her life filled in with dust, dirt floors, blinding snowstorms. They moved farther north in a covered wagon following the promise of rich soil. Sun on the faces, a large shadow of dust at their backs. Said the dust started in Texas and kept on blowing north. It goes on, but you can tell what that fax is like, life. And it's a wonderful way to write about someone. Just choose someone, perhaps the person who named today, and write the facts of them, the facts about my. This one ends, she was buried in May. 214 descendants watched her descend beneath the town of births, bruises, and shotguns. Beneath the full-hearted sound of piano keys and her voice on a Saturday night. So think of it. Her name was Daisy. To start, her name was. And then you start to just write down all the facts you can think of about this person. And it's a lovely way to write, and you'll be amazed what comes out of it. A lot of good things come out of it. The fourth suggestion I have, if none of these three interest you, is similar to the facts about, but it's what I loved or hated about. And you just say, or what she, or what they, or what you, how I loved my mother when I was, or how I loved, now let's go beyond the mother, when I was, and then you hang it on ages, when I was 5, when I was 10, when I was 15, when I was 20. And the things, some topics I thought of, what I loved about clothes when I was 5. Or you could do 2, 3, 4, and 5. For example, my daughter, when she was 3, would only wear floor-length gowns. And when she was 4, she would only wear Oshkosh overalls. And when she was 5, she would only wear blue jeans. So if she remembered that, she could write that. When I was about 15, those full felt skirts that had poodles on them, that were a full circle, were in fashion, and I never got one. My mother made one, and it wasn't a full circle, and the poodle didn't look the same. So I could have, when I was 15, what I loved about clothes was that skirt, and I could write about not having gotten it when I was 15. You could do your room, your childhood room, your baby room, rooms you remember. And you could, if depending on your age, you could do when you were 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. What room did you live in when you were 20? Where were you when you were 20? What room did you live in when you were 30? What room did you live in when you were 40? You know, even if you lived in the same house, maybe you occupied a different room. Maybe you spent more time in a different room later. So you could, or you could do houses. But what I loved or hated about the space. Another one is books or music or hymns. What songs did you sing? What songs did you love? What songs do you associate with being 5 or 10 or 15 or 20? Rock and roll songs, folk songs, hymns, childish songs. When you were a young parent, what did you sing to your children? You know, so but decide on an interval of age and go with that. Go do decades or do every 5 years. When you can start now, you can say what I love most about music now is not what I used to love. And then you could write a little about what you love now. And then you would go to what I used to love and move back through your life that way. Your church, have you changed churches? Or your experience of church? You know, when I was a 5-year-old, when I was a child, sitting in church was pure torture, or it was pure delight. I would lay my head in my mother's lap, and she would brush my eyebrows, you know, or some memory like that. And then different experiences of church through the years. So you could just hang that on an interval. And the interval, if you can invoke that time in your past, is really fun to think about. Or your family, what I loved about my family of origin, the families that I've created since I've been an adult, or say a sister or brother, or a spouse, or my children. You know, you could talk about dolls, having dolls when you were a child, my rubber doll, you know. And then now I have my own children. What I loved about love. Who did I love to love? What did I love to love? Where were my passions growing up? And again, hang them on ages. Or a color, or a favorite, anything. So those are your suggestions. Does anyone want anything repeated? All right. It's up to you. I'll be back in 12 minutes. All right, I'm going to pull us back together now. Obviously, you are invited to go back to your rooms and continue this later, so it's an invitation onto the blank page, and what you've got down now is, I'm sure, going to be a great stimulus to you, and it's probably going to be have some form that you didn't even know was there, but that's not what we'll worry about. I have a few rules at this point. I'm sort of strict. My rules are, in the guidelines for reading back, we are allowed to make 2 sorts of comments to one another in response to the reading. One of the comments is, I liked how you said, fill in the blank. You can say to one another, when someone reads, I liked how you said, and the other one is, I would like to hear more about. So those are the only 2 kind of comments that I will allow. I liked how you said, and I would like to hear more about. Another rule is that when someone tells us a story, we cannot respond with our own story. Because this session now is not about telling stories to one another about our lives. It's about writing. So the only thing that we will hear is the writing itself, the words on the page, and I liked when you said, and I'd like to hear more about. We can, people may cry. Sometimes these stories invoke tears in us. We will honor the crying with some respect, but we don't have to fuss about it. Tears are not such a bad thing. I recommend crying every day, actually. I think it's good for your voice. So don't panic if you find you're crying. And I don't want you to editorialize when you read something. I don't want you to start by saying, well, this isn't really any good, but, or what was happening here was we were on the train to, I don't want to hear about it. I just want you to read the words on the page. I want us to respond in this fairly formulaic way, and I don't want to hear your story in response to your written word. I want you to write your story, but this session is about the written word. So, with those guidelines and my strict side having been revealed, I would like to invite anyone who'd be willing to start us out by reading some of her words or his words to do so. Who would like to read? Okay, terrific.
I couldn't decide what to write about for a long time, but I decided that music was a joy for me from an early in my life. My mother had a wonderful voice and would entertain us by singing some of the old folk songs, but her biggest love was singing hymns. She was given an instrument with strings and would get it out on a Sunday afternoon and sang many of the old hymns. We also had an old pump organ. My love for music was evidently noticed by my mom and dad because they decided they would buy a piano. Since we lived on a farm, my dad said that the final check from picking asparagus would be used to buy the piano. I was 7 at that time and got up at 4:30 in the morning to help my mother and brother pick asparagus for the final week of the harvest. It was an exciting time when we bought the piano, and my mom bought a beginning piano book for me so I could start learning to play. I especially liked to play when I was called to wash supper dishes.
Who would like to say something in response to that lovely piece?
It's delightful.
Has someone else got the response that they'd like to make?
This is very touching.
I liked what you said about, you know, how hard you had to work to get something so precious.
I'd like to hear more.
And I'd like to hear more about what hymns they were.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know more about your family. It sounds like a nice place to grow up.
I'd like to hear more about the work that you had to do to get what you wanted and needed in your life in other areas besides asparagus and pianos.
She is. You want me to write a book?
You could.
Thank you very much. That was lovely. Who would like to read next?
My house when I was growing up was built in 1904 by a pioneer of the Puyallup Valley in Washington. I loved the house for its large rooms, bay windows, front and back parlors, a fireplace in each. There was only one wide stairway to the upstairs, but also a well-documented maid stairwell that had been walled up, which gave my brother, sister, and I many imaginative ideas about what might be walled up in there, hidden. We had, the two parlors had oriental rugs. My mother sometimes apologized for the fact that the front parlor rug was American made, but the back parlor rug was a much larger room and had a silk hand-tied Chinese rug. There was such a feeling of safeness and security and love in my home. Now when I am 50 years older, I have an apartment in Spokane and a house that was built in 1904 by Mr. Comstock, who was a pioneer in Spokane. Even though the apartment is only what used to be a dining room and a library, when I am there, I have the same feeling of safeness and security and feel the love from my old home of long ago.
Thank you.
Comments or feedback for her?
I like how you described the home as a safe, first of all, what it was like, and then how it was a safe place for you.
It made me feel like I wanted to go to that place.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know more about what went on in the front parlor. What went on in the back parlor?
I like when you talked about something was walled up and hidden, and I like how descriptive. I could really picture the house.
The walled up and hidden certainly made us think that there might be secrets there that would be fun. That would be the next chapter. Any other comments? That was lovely. Thank you. It's really fun to hear. Who would like to read next? Okay.
The thing I remember about my mother is the wonderful soup she made. I can still see the big kettle that she cooked it in. The aroma of the soup still lingers in my nostrils and my heart. We lived on a farm, and all the neighbors said her soup was the very best. Along with that, was the homemade bread that came out of the oven and smelled heavenly too. And my four brothers shared this wonderful food along with my father. After we got married, we moved 130 miles away from home, but it was never too far to go home and have her wonderful food. My husband enjoyed it more than anyone. After our daughter grew up, and at one point, soup wasn't on her menu. But as she grew a little older, she realized how wonderful it really was. Now she has a home of her own, does not make the kind of soup Grandma made, but cunningly drops a hint or two when they come to visit us. We do not have the recipe, but seem to know when the taste is right. I would ask my mother how much of this and that, and her answer was always, you can kind of tell.
You can kind of tell. Do people have some feedback for her?
I can smell bread.
I imagine carrots and a lot of carrots, a lot of vegetables.
I like the stories of the old days. I like all these stories because I can tie into them having lived in those times.
I liked a phrase early on that you said where you felt you could remember it in your nostrils and in your heart, maybe?
In my heart.
Yeah, that was a nice phrase.
I like just the thought of that good-tasting soup and how food has a way of filling us with that warmth and being loved.
Like the feeling of the generations from your mother to your daughter.
I noticed that too. It's good. You're starting to write about generations and the passing on of things through generations, which is going to be interesting to continue.
I like when she said, how far it was to be there, but it's never too far to go home.
Yeah. I wish I had the recipe.
It's always a little bit different. She always said, well, you can kind of tell. And whatever she made, bread or whatever, you can kind of tell.
And when she read that line, when you read that line, I thought, there's the title to the book. Who would like to read next? Katrina.
I chose Facts About My Mother. My mother gave birth to 2 daughters and 4 sons. Fact is, she loved us all as if we were one. My mother is not at all fickle, even though one day she reached up on her closet shelf and gave me her last nickel. When I was 15, I started to act out because I thought I was grown. So to curtail my rebellion, she surprised me with my own phone. As I entered into adulthood, fact is, my mother entered into even more motherhood. I needed to make my own choice, and boy, I did. Fact is, through it all, I always hear her voice.
So, feedback for Katrina about the writing, about the words on the page, and what you'd like to hear more about.
I liked your counterpoint of your experience and your mother's response.
And then she loved you as one. I thought that was very interesting.
That was the fact is.
I was the fact is.
That's good.
Repeated.
Uh-huh.
I like the poeticness.
Yeah. Very alliterative.
The brevity, but you said so much.
I like when you said about my mother, that she became more my mother or something. You said the way you said that, I really like that. Mm-hmm.
Into it, as I became an adult, something about that. She became more of a mother.
As I entered into adulthood, fact is, my mother entered even more motherhood.
That was powerful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lovely. Good story. All of these stories have been wonderful. Who's next? Terry.
Okay. Ding dong, doors are closing. Doors are closing. Welcome to Run 789. This is a red line train to Howard. Please do not lean against the doors. Please do not lean against the doors. Chicago is next. In the direction of travel, life opens on the right. Ding dong. This is Chicago. Please use all available doors. Please use all available doors. And yield priority seating to women with children and the elderly and physically challenged. Hello, is anybody listening? Ding dong, doors are closing. Doors are closing. Doors are closing. Transfer to the brown line for some love, some pain, sometimes avenues. Ding dong, doors are closing. Ding dong, for heartache, heartbreak, please transfer to the black and blue line. This is Chicago. This is Chicago. Please do not lean against the doors. Please do not lean against the doors. In the midst of chaos, confusion, and criticism, please use all available doors. In the direction of travel, love opens on the right. But please do not lean against the doors.
People got feedback for Terry?
I like when she said, in the midst of chaos and confusion, use all available exits.
I like the repetitiveness of that. You know, kept us hanging in there. We wanted to hear the next thing she was going to say.
Mm-hmm. I would like to hear more. Mm-hmm.
When you publish your first volume, I'd like to buy it. It was really, really beautiful.
This is a definite pattern.
And it was like so meaningful. It's like, wait a minute, I have to go back and think about that again. Yeah. I want to hear that again. I want to read it again. Mm-hmm. I want to hear more.
If you've ever been to Chicago, the trains, it's all directions.
The only time I was in Chicago, which was recently.
Nope, no stories to tell.
Trains crashed. Oh, dear.
I want to hear more about where this train's going.
Yeah. So. I want to get off at the love door.
Okay. I do like the fact that you really were teaching, at least that's how I heard it, that you were not only instructing, but you were kind of evoking. And I felt, even though there was kind of treacherous places to go, that your voice was assuring to me.
So you sense something ominous, kind of.
Yeah, when it moved to brown one and then to black and blue, mm-hmm. Oh my.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as a follow-up to what he's saying, I was glad you didn't get off the train at those places. You know, you waited, I mean, we knew you got as far as the love line.
Oh yeah, it could go on.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Was there another? Who wants to read next is the question. Okay, you and then Ivan. Chris and then Ivan.
Okay. Unplanned, in my 30s, I returned to the womb. I didn't intend this retreat. It just began with my room. For the first time ever, my theme was dark green, dark as a forest, dark as a dream. The center, a bed of billowy mood, rocking and floating, I was upheld in warm fluid. The windows were drawn by slats covered with browns, patterns of Africa, warm, basic as ground. Open the slats and lush greens stood shading my hut, baskets and creatures guarded me well from each dresser and shelf. Now that I look from this place back to them, I see I created a perfect small den. To do the great work that I'd be compelled to perform, the work of alone in myself, being born and reborn.
Mm. Thank you. People have some feedback and response for Chris.
I like the way you set the tone at the very beginning with all the dark greens. I don't know, think a somber tone.
It gave us a lot of room for imagination about, you know, you described things very well about what they were like and how they felt to you and so on.
I felt like you had to retreat from life to find life, you know. That's what I felt. Thank you.
Yes. Very nice.
I like the use of color and green, and it felt like the color pulled me into the womb-like place intensely. It was intense.
Yeah, I heard descriptive adjectives and adverbs, very descriptive, very picturesque
yeah.
adjectives, I thought, like you say, pulled you into it.
And I don't know how you did it so poetically in 12 minutes or less.
Yeah. Thank you, that was lovely.
Thank you.
Deep and... I want to hear more about the rebirth. Ivan, you're next.
Okay. The fact about my grandmother was that she was loving, caring, a Christian, and helpful to me. She taught me how to cook, sew, make homemade ice cream, and to be respectful to myself and the brothers and others. There were lots of beautiful things that made my grandmother's house so welcome. The smell of the garden and her homemade preserves. She is in the gates of heaven now. Her love and spirit follows me all the days of my life. I will never forget her. Thank you.
Could you read the line again about respect? I couldn't quite hear it. Someone was coming by. It's about a third of the way in.
Oh, she taught me how to be respectful to myself as well as to others.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you.
This your grandmother?
Read the opening line, the opening two lines again.
The fact about my grandmother were that she was loving, caring, and Christian, and helpful to me. She taught me how to cook, sew, make homemade ice cream, and to be respectful to myself as well as to others. There were lots of beautiful things that made my grandmother's house so welcome. The smell of the garden and the homemade preserves. She is in the gates of heaven now. Her love and spirit follows me all the days of my life. I will never forget her.
I feel like you were very fortunate to have a grandmother.
Yes.
I think it's tremendously important to give tribute, you know, to those people who have gone on, you know,
I liked the specific images, the smells of the garden, and some of the discipline that I sensed that you described. I like the way you described that with such respect for her. I want to know more about her. I want to know what you were doing there at her house. I want to know what the relationship was like. So thank you very much. Are there other feedback, other comments? It was very lovely. Wonderful. Thank you. According to my watch, it's a little past 1:45. I'm happy that lunch is served at noon, and I'm happy to sit here and continue to. I would love to hear more people's writing. So, what do you think? Anyone is free to go, of course, but I would like to spend another 10 minutes or so, if we could.
Yes, I would like to do that, too, and I'd like to share my story.
Oh, good. Why don't you read to us?
Okay. this is Lessons About Bread from Grandma. How blessed I was growing up in a large family whose grandma baked bread every other day. As a young teenager, for 2 weeks every summer, I spent at my grandmother's house playing with my aunts and cousins and being loved by all my mother's 5 brothers and 5 sisters and their children. Every other morning, as I entered the kitchen, there on the kitchen table sat a big tan-colored dishpan of bread dough, waiting to be kneaded and shaped into loaves. On special days and when Grandma had time, she would heat a big kettle of lard on the wood stove and fry pieces of dough, which she called fried doughs, and then powder them with sugar. Aunt Shirley, who was 2 years older than I, was always allowed to have a steaming cup of coffee with hers, but Grandma made sure that I had a cup of hot chocolate with mine. Many years later, being a wife and mother and a person who liked to cook with raw ingredients and having a neighbor who made her own bread, the smell of fresh baked bread just seemed like something that I would like to have in my kitchen. After a lesson and a few attempts, I discovered it was easy. It was an easy thing to do. But the number of boys added to the one I had became 3. We had 4 boys. And so time for baking bread was not always allowed until I became a daycare provider, when this wonderful aroma again filled the house as the children enjoyed making bread.
Who would like to reflect her words back to her or give her some feedback on her words?
I like the way she described the kettle or bowl that the bread was in, and bowl. I thought that was interesting.
Uh-huh.
The bread theme carried through so well.
Absolutely. And now I want to know more about how she uses bread with this daycare business. Because the bread is the theme of the framework for the whole story.
I would like to know about her recipe when she puts it, fries it in the lard.
It's very, in these pieces, it's very nice to put recipes. And it's also good to put the words to songs, all the words to songs you can remember or hymns. So if you continue writing, please, the more detail and fact you put in, the people will love it, I promise you. So the recipes, things like that.
Is that fine bread, is that a southern tradition?
No discussion, no story. Oh, I guess that would be a question. That would be all right. So you would say, I would like to know.
I would like to know if that was a southern practice of fried bread.
And then you would have to write the answer.
And I'd have to write the answer, okay. Thank you.
Who else? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just liked how the bread was like a metaphor for all the love you had in your life from your extended family, and now how you're continuing that on with your work. That's very nice.
Metaphor, and see, we never said a word about metaphor, and all of a sudden we've got a metaphor going here. So you have to trust the process. It really does. It's amazing the themes that emerge and how you discover what you want to say through a process like that. Who else will read to us? We haven't heard from any of the men's voices, have we? Either of the men's voices.
I'll read my two paragraphs.
All right. Let's hear your two paragraphs.
It was rarely anything other than regular with cream, though sugar, fresh brewed and steaming, but it was there at her nightstand. Most mornings, before she ever turned over or stretched, and she took the cup from me. I can't remember when I first started to make my way downstairs to brew the coffee and to pour not one cup, but two, and bring them back upstairs, but it's become a morning ritual for both of us. It's always been a cup of blessing, although some would wonder why.
Who has feedback or comments?
I'd like to know more about this relationship.
There are more pages to write.
I just love how you wrote the sacred and profane together, and that one phrase, a cup of blessing.
And I like this, I love the specific description of the coffee. You know, you can almost smell it and you knowing what it is. Not just, you could have just said a cup of coffee, but instead you described it, which I appreciated. And I appreciated also the description of the trip down and up. Mm-hmm. So yes, we want to know more about the relationship. Any other feedback or comments there? Thank you very much. It was very beautifully written. I think we have time for one more. Okay.
This is called My First Flight. We were married in our 30s. I was eager to know about his past, likes, hobbies, experiences. His stories about radio-controlled airplanes fascinated me. As a teenager and even younger, Harold learned the skill of building and flying radio-controlled airplanes from Pastor Pete of a little Lutheran church in Rain, North Dakota. His mother let him build in the basement and even run those loud motors there. Her tolerance may have developed partly because of the participation of the pastor. So Harold began cutting his little pieces of balsa with his Dremel in our garage after supper and could be found there most evenings. As the shape of the airplane became evident, it was covered with a very colorful plastic foil and ironed onto the wood to become a beautiful work of art. The motor and radio were installed, and after weeks of preparation, it was time for the virgin flight. We drove out to the country to a reasonably flat area where he could take off from the road. Harold was more excited even than I. The motor was started and screamed loudly into the previously quiet countryside. I watched with excited anticipation to see his flying skills in action. Down the runway it went. We had liftoff. He made a sharp turn directly into the only tree within a quarter-mile radius. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry as those wings wrapped around that single tree. I couldn't help the hilarious scene left me in giggles that wouldn't quit. Tears ran down my face, which was turned away from Harold, and then I ran out of time. I'm still late to
Do we have some feedback for her?
Yes, I would like to hear more about how, Harold's reaction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
They did. Harold laughed.
He was laughing too much. Eventually.
He laughed. I like that. You have appreciation for his heart.
I like the description. I liked a lot of the descriptive phrases, like including the flatness and the road with the lift off and the balsa wood, and the specific of after dinner was when he took time to do this and he could be out there most evenings. And I felt like I really had a good picture of it. I'm going to use her as an example to say a number of you have written love stories, and I would say that that was a love story, and I would say that that one was a love story. So you know, when you're writing a love story, you could be writing about anything. And so that's one of the things that I wanted you to feel freed from having to say, how can I write a love story about my beloved grandmother or husband or child or something? But you write the story of your relationship, of some event, some occurrence, something that happened. And that's the love story. And it's nice to know that, because then that doesn't mean you have to write everything that happened. Because that's too big. We can't do that. That would take too long and too much paper, and it's too heavy. But to be able to write a little, to write that story is a love story. So with those words, I want to encourage you all to keep on writing. You're wonderful writers. I'm going to be doing a writing workshop again tomorrow at 5, and again the following day at 10:45, and if you'll come back, we'll write some more. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.